This is the Male Media Mind Bearcast. I'm Malcolm Travers. Male Media Mind is an organization dedicated to unifying and uplifting the Black Bear community through dialogue, insight, creativity, and knowledge. In the 10th episode of the M3 Bearcast, we're discussing the principle of protest. With the recent passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana, many companies have come to protest the state's bill. Several companies from Angie's List, Disciples of Christ, Eli Lilly, Indiana University, and Gen Con have all boycotted activities and expansions within the state of Indiana. Now, when we recorded this podcast, this actually happened before the passage of the bill and the resulting protests, but it's about the same principle. Do protests actually work? Is it a way of simply registering your opposition to a certain policy, or is it an effective way to institute change? I speak with M3 contributors Breeze Vincennes, Gerald Hogan, and David Volan about this issue. David, you were basically talking about, Black organizations protesting Florida. I remember we talked about this once before, I guess, with, the Academy Awards at one point? And we were just talking about how when there were certain, basically, movies and directors and actors who were snubbed, you know, protesting the award shows. Different civil rights organizations were thinking about doing that. And, thinking about whether it's a principled act or an effective strategy. You know, I think it's a principled act to boycott it. And like you were saying, I think you were upset by the fact that there were Black organizations that were holding events in Florida based on some of their track records on, you know, Stand Your Ground, some of these shootings that have happened in the past. But I guess my question was, is a boycott of the entire state of Florida an effective strategy, or is it just a principled stand that these organizations should take?
It's a strategy. I mean, what it really requires is for people to network and really target places, venues where Black Americans spend money. Like Epcot Center, for instance. That's a huge tourist attraction. And if all of a sudden, you know, and Epcot Center has a really pretty, you know, they're bigwigs. So if they notice that there's a decline in the population of Black American people, and they understand that it's because that they're protesting the politics in their state, and they understand that this is going to hurt business, then, you know, we've got an ally. We've got someone that is pretty much pushed in a corner to come out and say, well, we support the movement to have these laws removed from our books. And, I mean, those are really strategic. So I'm really talking about strategic economic sanctions against the state of Florida so that we understand, like for me, if there's a product that I know that is manufactured in Florida, then I'm not going to purchase it, you know, because unless it's a product that I know that's from a company that supports the abolition of the Stand Your Ground laws and is also actively involved in cleaning up the voter the voting issues there, because you know. Florida has had a horrible track record in voting rights. You know, they've done all kinds of things to try to keep Black Americans from casting their vote. In fact, remember the election, the Obama election, where they held out to the very last minute, and they had pulled the same stunt the last time in the Bush election, and then they came out and said, you know what, Florida, guess what? When you get your thing together, let us know. But we don't need your vote. The president has already been elected, and we don't need your votes in order to make it conclusive. So when you guys get your thing together down there, you let us know. I mean, that was a power play to let them understand that people were frustrated with the way that they were manipulating the vote in that state. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, so, yes, of course, I'm talking about a focused event where we look, we have a strategy saying, who can we get to be our allies? How can we impose economic sanctions in certain ways so that we can get attention and that we can get support? How can we get certain institutions to come out and make official statements in our favor? Because they're not. I mean, you know, I mean, Epcot, think about these. Florida is a tourist state. Their income is completely dependent upon people coming to their state, like South Africa, like Sun City, for instance. I mean, you know, I look at it as the same type of genre. And by targeting this state and by targeting some of the largest, you know, money-making institutions, you know, we can actually get them as allies. We need them to come out on our side and say, hey, we got to change this. People are scared to come. People are scared to come to our state. They're concerned, and we want them to feel comfortable so they'll spend our dollars in our state.
Okay.
That's where gay rights have to really go at this point. And if we don't do it, nobody's going to do it. But it takes organization. It takes someone to challenge them and say, hey, let's talk about this. Let's get it together.
Okay.
I did an article about this and it was a while ago. And so what I did is I researched all of the square miles, the linear square miles of beachfront property in the United States. And I think like Florida was like something like, you know, 8% or something of all of the beaches in the United States of America that we could, you know, if you really got to be on the beach, there's other beaches. You know, that was just my
challenge. No. Okay. Let me ask you, Breeze, what we were talking about before, dealing with, say, I think you were talking about some of the gay events such as Heatism, Boy Pride. I guess Big Boy Pride is coming up next weekend, and I think it is. I don't know. But saying, like, are they not socially aware of some of the things that are going on in Florida, and do you think that a protest of the state of Florida would be an effective way of instituting change? What do you say to that?
I don't think protests in the state of Florida is an effective way to change. I definitely think that injecting Big Boy Pride with acknowledgement of the things that are going on in Florida would be an awesome idea. You know, to have keynote speakers to sort of address some of those issues that a lot of the guys down there think might not affect them, I think would be awesome. I'm not exactly sure how effective boycotting a state would be as far as affecting social change. It almost sounds like cutting off their nose to spite your face. Because if there's a social movement to affect the economy of the state, that isn't necessarily helping the people struggling in Florida already. So I'm not exactly sure that's the most effective way. And I don't know how fearful people are. I am not sure how fearful African Americans are as a whole to go to the state of Florida. Particularly when it comes to the black gay community, no one I know is afraid to go down to Miami to visit. But I can tell you, ain't nobody going to Detroit. I mean, if you're talking about the fearfulness of the community, I think people are really looking at Detroit and being like, I'm never going to Detroit. There hasn't been that sort of fear involved with Florida. And granted, that's what I think it would be great if those issues are brought up, you know, during the pride. I just don't know if boycotting the state would be effective.
Yeah, I was thinking there's something more recent that I guess dealing with the transgender bathroom laws that were passed in Florida. Have you heard about those?
I have not heard about that.
Well, basically, I think recently I just heard it not too long ago that
there have basically been some laws in Florida, and I think there might be other states as well, who passed these laws that say that if you are a transgender man, that you are now forced to use the women's bathroom by penalty of law, you know, whatever your gender was before you had gender reassignment surgery or hormone therapy or however. So now, you know, by penalty of law, there are these basically men who are having to go into women's bathrooms or women who are having to go into men's bathrooms because the laws there, I don't know, are twisted to the sense that somehow that transgender person is going to threaten the people within that bathroom versus the other way around. Because I assume if a transgender woman was forced to use the men's bathroom, that would raise some suspicions. Or some eyebrows?
Yeah, you know? I mean, and it's very odd, because that is odd, particularly if it's somebody who's post-op. That is very odd. Like, if it's a post-op transsexual woman, transgender, I guess, maybe a transgender woman, who was post-op, one, I guess, how would you know?
Like, yeah, that's true.
I would detest that.
Yeah.
But even if you were pre-op, it's just, I don't know. That sounds very odd, and it definitely sounds like it could skid over into some civil rights issues. Because it seems like it was concerning you looking at somebody's genitalia. It just seems like a violation of somebody's civil rights.
Yeah.
You're just trying to pee. Why you gotta look at my crotch? It seems odd.
Yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the reality is that many of these states, Florida is one of them. I mean, they're turning the social clocks back in many ways. You know, and you know, you really, at the end of the day, you have a choice. You can be apathetic about it. You can pretend like it doesn't exist. You can say, oh, it doesn't affect me now. You know, but the reality is that, you know, one of the things that people don't realize, if I take you back to 1980, to the moral majority, to Ronald Reagan when he ran for president of the United States, I don't think that black people really understood the impetus of that era, what the moral majority really meant. The moral majority was a political platform that intended to implant people with its political bent into strategic offices in the local governments across the country, and it also incorporated the young Republicans, their kids that they were instilling these values in, so that 30 years later, which is now, these young Republicans would be in strategic positions so that they could turn back the political and social clocks. And, you know, it appears that nobody really paid attention to that. Now, the only thing that confounded them that Ronald Reagan didn't really, you know, conceive of was the huge influx of Latino and Asian and Middle Eastern and other populations that were not Republican, that, you know, sort of tended to water down that focus. But the focus exists, and we're seeing that because we're wondering, look at America, look at these places, we're going, how in the world do we have these places where there are these huge black American populations and the top officials that are making these conservative decisions do not represent that population. And that represents a concerted effort to get people of their mindset into these strategic political offices, and they succeeded at it. While we were, you know, not paying attention to what was going on in 1980 with the moral majority and Ronald Reagan going into political office. And, you know, of course, you know, that's the thing that's happening in Ferguson now, where that we've had everyone say, oh, okay, now, yeah, we've got these bad laws and we need to unwrite them. Well, we can't unwrite them if we don't get into these strategic political offices. And we certainly can't do anything if we don't let people understand that were unhappy about it. And what makes people understand, you look at the boycotts in the 60s, is their pocketbooks. When people don't make money, when they're not making money, then they make changes. You know, so I'm just saying, you know, and it goes for, you know, like these laws with bathroom laws, with transgender, you know, I think that I don't know how to interpret that. I mean, it's so crazy. I don't know whether it's people who just honestly do not understand how to manage the phenomena of transgenderism, and they really haven't done their homework to find out culturally sensitive ways to manage it, you know, or whether they're just complete idiots, or whether they really have a bias and they really want to make it hard for these people, you know. That's just so crazy. But, I mean, you do have to realize that if a transgender man goes into the men's bathroom, it's going to raise a brow if he's dressed like a woman. I mean, but I see women go into the men's bathroom all the time. In fact, if you live in a city like I do, a big city, you know, people go in whatever bathroom is available. I mean, we in Washington, we have like generic bathrooms now. I mean, there's like a male and a female one. It just says bathroom. I mean, some places have them separated by gender. But, I mean, you know, hey, what can I say, man? You know,
yeah.
I find that to be really crazy.
I think that it does bring attention. I think there are some people that are going to follow and participate in those protests, but the majority, I mean, like with Florida, I didn't think much about it. You know, I'm going, and I don't remember, like, when is the protest supposed to, how long is it supposed to last, when is it supposed to be over, because I just don't know. I don't remember what, like you said, even with Arizona, what the results of those were. But I think it's just kind of particularly hard to, you know, protest the state per se. I don't know if it makes it much difference, because, like, I guess Breeze made the point, a lot of people are living there, so, and if, you know, if my mom lives in Florida, am I not going to visit anymore because of those laws? I'll probably go, you know, because I don't expect that it's going to impact me severely while I'm there visiting for a couple of days. So that's kind of where I'm on it.
I'm not saying boycott the state in that way. I'm saying strategic boycotts, a strategic strategy. So, I mean, going to visit your mother that lives in Florida obviously would not fall under that category, you know, going to visit a relative. What I'm saying is that the state has a poor track record of civil rights on many different levels, and that apparently nobody's really dealing with it. I mean, it's like people are grumbling under their breath, but, you know, they're still going there. I mean, in spite of the fact that they're shooting black men because they feel that they're intimidated by them, people are still, you know, they're ignoring it. And, I mean, to me, I mean, it's an affront, you know, to my very existence. And so in order for me to go to, I mean, I can no longer go to that place. I have no reason to go there. I don't have any relatives. The only reason why I would go there is to protest and to be part of a protest movement. And I certainly would not, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, you have these institutions that make a lot of money. And they have a lot of power and influence, and they know what's going on in that state. They have the ability to use their political influence to affect the policy of that state. And I think that one of the ways that, of course, that legislation happens is by partnering with organizations that have a lot of power and influence. And obviously these corporations that make a lot of money from the black American community, you know, they have to be sort of prodded and reminded, you know, yes, we do contribute this much to your wealth, and so we really need you to use your influence in order to help us make this political change. There's no harm in doing that. We're not talking about your average everyday, you know, I'm going to visit my cousin, or you know, I have to go down and take care of some business, or I have to do a business trip. We're talking about people going there on vacations. We're talking about, because that's really where they make their money. You know, and so my thing is, really, you're fucking shooting black men in cold blood, and you're discriminating against black people who are voting in your state, and you still expect black people to come to your state and spend money to have a vacation? I mean, is that a realistic expectation?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, it has to be. And once again, I'm not talking about a wholesale. I'm talking about a very focused and targeted boycott of certain institutions in that state that have the political clout to assist in having legislation change. And then the other thing is, you know, if you choose to ignore what's going on and you go down that motherfucker and get shot dead, then, hey, what can I say? But it won't be my black ass.
I get what David's saying, and I get what Joe's saying. But I still stand by the idea of even, I get the idea of an organized movement in order to address those issues going down Florida. I still maintain, I don't think that boycotts and protests are the most effective way to get to have that change occur. It's definitely, I mean,
what
these
are they?
Some of the, but these are
what
some
are
of the
most
that
effective
brought,
ways?
If you let me finish, dude. These are some of the issues that were coming up, you know, with the Ferguson trial. You know, when a lot of the young people, you know, a lot of the old school, you know, went back to those, you know, and they went back to the sort of civil rights tropes of marching, protesting, sit-ins. And the younger people were like, we need to be a little bit more organized than, you know, having marches down the street. We need to be a little bit more organized than, you know, boycotting the stores, because it's not as if there's one. It's a different world. It's not like one main revenue stream. Of course, if we can affect businesses, that is the most effective way to get the message across. If we can affect the powers that be through the pocketbook, that is the most effective way to get your point across. The problem is, this is 2015. It's not 1965. There's more than one way to make a buck. So there's not one gateway to these people's pockets. And so what we need to do is to have more legal representation. We need to get more people knowing their rights, knowing the laws. We can affect real legal change to get the laws changed, to get more, to get more ideas on the docket during the getting more voter registrations out there. So there, just in my opinion, there's more effective ways of doing it. If you want to get the gay community on there, then you go down there. You go to Black Pride and you have this seminar and you tell people these are the things that are going on in your state and these are the things that we can do to mobilize in order to address these issues. You become more strategic, because the sort of civil rights, you know, with all due respect, but clearly those movements made us where we are today. But it's not effective in 2015. You know, like the Sacramento Watch doesn't march, you know, doesn't truly translate that well today. There are different ways to go about it. And no one, and you know, the same way that people were complaining about Oprah when Oprah wanted to, you know, just march and just sit in, the young people are like, we're not having that. We don't want to do that. It's not effective. I mean, it was cool back in 1965. It's not really cool today. The different things that we want to do, the different things that we can do, why are we not using technology? Why are we not using social media? Why aren't we going out to, you know, to the gay pride? You know, instead of, you know, lambasting the circuit parties, why not have something in the hotel room? You know, if you're any other type of minority, why aren't those other minorities just getting together and talking about this? and affecting real change outside of marching. That's all. I just don't see the effectiveness of boycotting in 2016.
No, I think there was a good point that was raised there, which is just like awareness, because I think, you know, basically tying into the idea of like what there is so much information out there about, you know, different things that are happening. I remember actually it was before one of these conference calls, one of the recording of the podcast, and we were talking about voter ID laws. I think it was Mark and I, we were talking about it. And we were just actually having, you know, obviously like when we're here having a debate about different issues. I mean, some people are just not going to agree on what is a problem and what's not. And, you know, thinking about like voter ID and the Voting Rights Act and, you know, access to the polls, those sorts of things. I don't think anyone can be really up to date on everything. So I think you do have a point that one effective form of activism now is just simply disseminating information. Yeah. Awareness about exactly what's happening. Protests tend to form organically once people know what the issues are. Because usually what happens, you know, the protest cycle is something bad happens. You know, people get angry. They want to do something about it while they're angry. Then something else happens, and we forget about it. You know, because, you know, shit is happening all the time. So, you know, a continuous presence is, I think, a little difficult because, you know, you just, life goes on kind of deal. You know, I thought it was true of definitely like, say, gun rights legislation. I think Obama kind of mentioned it over and over. Like, how many of these school shootings do you have to have before we, you know, that you feel okay with taking away people's Uzis? You know, like, and apparently a lot, because, you know, it just keeps happening. And I think it's kind of the same thing, you know, with the police shootings or with your stand your ground type laws, which, you know, there's that, or even voting ID laws, which I think, you know, I didn't want to get too much into, but like the idea that just requiring someone to present an ID disenfranchises thousands of people. But it's like, well, you just go get an ID. But yeah, but you know, like that sort of conversation being had, you know, even the felon rolls, like it's sort of a given that if you have a felony, that of course you lose your right to vote. Like, why? Why exactly do, you know, a minor drug charge make it where you can never vote for the rest of your life? Why is that the way it is, you know, or even saying that? So, I don't know, I think education's on that. And there is a certain amount, especially when you're talking about the younger generation, in which, you know, social media would have to play a larger part in people's strategy. I think people are kind of realizing that.
And that will bring us to the end of the 10th episode of the M3 Bearcast. Thank you for listening. I'd like to thank M3 contributors Breeze Vincennes, Gerald Hogan, and David Volan for joining me. Be sure to rate us on iTunes, leave us a comment, and share our content. To get more content from M3, visit mailmediamind.com, where you'll find articles and videos dedicated to uplifting and unifying the Black Bear community. Again, my name is Malcolm Travers, and I hope you join us again next week for another edition of the M3 Bearcast.